Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to
Ray and Tay today, talking sports with friends.
Ray and Tay today,
sports radio on the dial. Check us out. We'll make you smile.
Hello. Happy Thanksgiving and welcome to the show. You're listening to Ray and Tay today, and I'm Ray, Tall Rayside.
And I'm Tay, gobble gobble, Eric Taylor. Give us a call, 718-664-9098. It's Friday. Let's talk some sports. A lot of stuff happening, a lot of stuff going to happen. We will take you back and forth and left and right and make it all right tonight with some sports. Check us out with the emails at rayandtaytoday@gmail.com, rayandtaytoday.com. Tweet at us, Facebook us, YouTube us, Ray. We're everywhere. And I'll say this, starting off with Thursday in the NFL, the breaking news of today is named by the gentleman Ray Rice, who is reinstated to the NFL. The arbitrator went in favor of Ray Rice and sort of said that the commissioner was kind of just winging it in terms of his arbitrary with his decision. So I think that's a blow to Roger Goodell. And I wonder, will a team like the Cardinals or Lions or a team in the playoff hunt, would they consider signing Ray Rice? Or does he just wait to 2015 probably to get a fresh start? What do you think is going to happen?
So it all comes down to the PR hit that you are willing to take or you think you'll take, right? Because from a football perspective, Ray Rice can still play. He's still in the prime of his career, even though he's had, you know, two bad years. But
last year was really bad. But it looks like that was more offensive line. Look at what Forsett's doing this year.
Right.
A new offensive line.
You could argue that he could add, we just talked about this off air, he can add easily to four or five teams in the playoff run. I mean, you can't tell me there's a team that, let's put it this way, I can't name a team that doesn't need a Ray Rice. Somebody as talented and versatile as he is out of the backfield.
What about the Niners? Wow. Because they could use a different type of back.
Yeah, with the beat-up Frank Gore, and Carlos Hyde hasn't really stepped up yet as a rookie. Yeah, absolutely.
Not consistently, yeah. He's had his moments, but I think it's going to be 2015 because I think you bring up a good point. I think the PR, I think people are kind of over it. And I think that with the decision coming on his side, I think that it's sort of in his statement, it makes you feel like, you know, Ray told the truth all along and they just overreacted to the video and they're covering their own butts because basically they tried to just, you know, give him two games in the beginning and help the Ravens and, you know, Bashotti and Goodell and this and that, and they like Ray and whatever. But they got it wrong, and because they got it wrong, the player himself basically faced double jeopardy and had to pay, and he didn't deserve that, and they overreacted. So I think, one, he'll definitely be back next year, but two, I think he's paying for his sins, and I think he'll make, going forward, he'll make an organization proud. I really do. So
look, all of the people that knew him before this said only good things about
Ray Rice.
So at the end of the day,
my cousin's son knows him. Grew up with him in New York.
Is that right?
Yeah. Tommy G, Michelle, my cousin Michelle, Kyle, my cool Kyle. Out of all our cousins, our first, the firstborn, he's 26 years old, 27. He knows Ray Rice. So I've heard good things about Ray.
Yep. So we'll see. I'm interested to see how this plays out, actually. From a football perspective, I would love to see him play. I mean, Ray Rice is a pleasure to watch.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, Ray Rice and Adrian Peterson should be both on the field. But let's talk about who was on the field getting their turkey, and we could work our way backwards. Because in Levi Stadium, two gentlemen at the end of the game were sitting at the 50-yard line with Michelle Tafoya eating some turkey. And the big overwhelming feeling that I got was, number one, my Super Bowl prediction is looking very nice with the Seahawks and Patriots. But two, I felt as if the leaders of this team, and supposedly 10 of the leaders went in and spoke with Pete Carroll, and they yelled at each other and hugged it out and hashed it out and put everything on the table. And I feel like they've healed the wounds of Super Bowl ego hangover. And I think they're headed in the right direction. And they put it on the Niners, which both of us thought the Niners would win. Although at the end, I thought, you know, Lynch, you know, if he got busy, maybe they had a shot and had to score 17-16. But it was 19-13, just like they beat the Cardinals. And, you know, Sherman, Thomas, Lynch, Russell Wilson, it's like their guys that are leaders are great players, and they're better than most teams' leaders and great players. I think the Niners are in trouble, Ray, and they're not going to make the playoffs.
You might be right. I've been pumping the Niners all year, and Colin Kaepernick, to me,
is not ready.
He's not advancing to that next level. You know, we saw a little bit of this with a couple of quarterbacks. I mean, Cam Newton comes to mind. He reached a certain level and they just didn't pump it to the next level. And Kaepernick's been to a Super Bowl, been to an NFC Championship game. I really think he's got all the tools necessary to be maybe not a top five, but certainly a top 10 quarterback. Just his physical ability puts him at top one or two. But then given the fact that, you know, maybe his offense in San Francisco doesn't really take advantage of all of his skills. I don't know if it's an offensive coordinator issue, if it's a Jim Harbaugh issue, or if it's a Colin Kaepernick issue, but he's got talent around him. I mean, think about that receiving core. You know, Stevie Johnson is his third receiver, and Crabtree and Bolden and Davis.
It's more about him.
It's got to be him.
But also, listen, they're missing their best weapon with the most speed in terms of what he goes up against, and that's Vernon Davis has not been healthy all season. And I think, if we're being honest, he locks in on Crabtree. He relies on Bolden. But
even Crabtree's had a horrible season underperforming this year.
It's been up and down. But, you know, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, you know, you start to look at the tape and you see the different things. These guys, they're not beating one-on-one coverage. And the one thing that you see, and you saw it on Sunday Night Football a couple weeks ago, or was it Monday Night Football, someone like an Antonio Brown who beat double coverage in the end zone in the corner to get a touchdown. And sometimes the great receivers, you have to beat double coverage. And so I don't know how, you know, by name, Crabtree, Bolden, Johnson, and Lloyd sound pretty good. But by their game and speed, I don't know if they're, you know, getting enough windows. And then Kaepernick is doing what Vic and RG3 have been doing, is just holding on to the ball too long. Because sometimes you just got to hit that third step or the fifth step, and you're, you know, whenever you're dropping three step, one step, five step drop, and then you got to let go of the ball. But I will disagree with you in terms of Cam Newton. I think Cam actually developed well, had a great season last year. And then this year, they just totally took everything from him. All he has is Greg Olsen. Benjamin's not that fast and doesn't know all the route tree yet. He's got the size, and he's a rookie. And Greg Olsen is still crafty. He's crafty. He's just his size.
He gets around.
But Olsen, you know, don't have the speed anymore. He's not as fast as he used to be in Chicago. So Cam has no help. You can still see that Cam...
So Brady's done, you know, doing more with less. Brady's had a lot of years where he hasn't had the best receivers. I don't know. I just think Cam hit a wall too, and I don't know. Again, you always look better when you have playmakers around you. So I'm not discounting that, but I think Cam's advancement has been stunted. Now maybe next year with Benjamin, and if they get a one or two solid offensive pieces, then maybe he'll continue his trajectory up, but his advancement has stopped.
Yeah. No, I see what you're saying. So let's give Seattle their props. We can't say enough about beast mode, can we? I mean, the dude is – he's incredible, Ray. I got to say, We spoke, did a segment about the Hall of Famers, and we talked about Gore being a Hall of Famer. Well, I think Marshawn Lynch is going to head that way too. I think we've noticed in this passing era that the thing that really still gets you to the promised land, it's a running back and it's the running game. And it's more important than ever. And this guy, he just keeps coming and coming and coming. And he gets the clutch first downs, the put you in second and threes and second and fours. It's beautiful to watch. It really is. So,
tip our hats.
And you know what?
People.
They're going to have a problem next year if they don't want to re-sign this guy. Because like we said, you look up and down their roster, you don't
find
these most.
Christian Michael are not ready. They're not ready.
Well, not only are they not ready, but he gives you an identity. And you're going to lose that identity quick, fast, and in a hurry. And you're going to have to pay Russell Wilson crazy dollars. So your offense is going to take a huge hit.
No, you're right. I would not move on from Marshawn Lynch. We'll see how that plays out. But I will say this. Right now, this is the question I have for you. Can Seattle go win in Arizona in the playoffs or in Green Bay?
They can, because they're the defending champs, defense travels, and that mentality and mindset of running the ball. And that's where Marshawn Lynch comes in. They're not explosive, but they can move the ball and they play D. So, yeah, they can win on the road. In fact, that's the one team I'm not worried about, where they play. Now, obviously, playing in Seattle gives them a huge advantage, but they can also win on the road. I think last year they were so different night and day at home versus on the road. But I think this year, also having been beaten a few times, I think they know how to win more than most. They know how to win on the road. So they'll be fine.
So then the Eagles-Cowboy game, I think it showed some ugliness from your team. They were bickering, and I heard Stephen A. Smith said, you guys look like a bunch of spoiled brats. It got bad, 33-10. You're making Sanchez look like a Super Bowl quarterback. I mean, but I'll give – you know what? I underestimated so much so that in fantasy football, I did not play the Eagles' defense, and I'm kicking myself for it. I'm rooting for the Vikings' defense against the Panthers in real ball. So I should have gone with the Eagles' defense that got 18 points. I just didn't think they'd be able to do that much, and they did. Romo mistakes, the worst game for Murray, 73 yards. The defense showed its weaknesses. It was a whooping all the way around, and we both picked the Eagles to win. I don't think anybody thought it'd be like that, though. Where do you think the Cowboys?
I predicted the Eagles would win. I told you a couple weeks ago I don't think the Cowboys are legit in terms of being an elite team. They may squeak into the playoffs, but I don't even think they'll make the playoffs. I think that the rest of the NFC will catch them. But what you did see is that Philly's just a better team. Philly's a better team on offense and on defense. And I'm tremendously
Nick Foles is not
impressed.
Getting that job back either, Ray. What are your thoughts on that? I don't think he's getting that job back.
Really? Well, I was going to say, I do think he'll get his job back, but I will say that I'm tremendously impressed. I take my hat off to Mark Sanchez. You know me. I didn't really like him at the USC. I didn't like the Jets trading up to get him as, the sixth pick in the first or fifth pick in the first round. I never thought he was a legitimate NFL starting quarterback, but I will say that he is a very, very capable backup. And he is sliding right in perfectly into that Chip Kelly offense, and good for him. You know what? You got to seize the opportunity, and he never knew when he would play again. But when his number was called, he delivered that quick, whatever they call it, offense in Philly. He's doing great. He's turning it over a little bit, but you know what? He is just good for him. Kudos to him. I'm gonna take off my hat. And it turns out that Chip Kelly is a machine. You plug a quarterback in that offense, and they just do wonders.
And wasn't it nice to see Shady, LeSean McCoy, have a monster game? And remember I told you on our show Wednesday night, the Turkey Eve show, that Jordan Matthews will get a touchdown, and him and Sanchez, they're connecting. And I don't know. I like the way the team is moving and looking with Sanchez. I got to say, Nick Foles was not having the greatest season compared to last year. And I think
I think the offense and the team is looking better. They had the hiccup in Green Bay, but overall they're looking better. And if Mark keeps it going, I just don't think Foles will get it back. And we'll have to talk about his Arizona team who, won the Pac-12 South or whatever, the East or whatever. So they're going to be playing Oregon in the championship game.
So the first game, we thought the Bears might surprise us with their talent and the Lions have seemed a little off, but you know what? They got it together, Ray, and they got it together. And now if Reggie Bush can come back with Bell and Riddick, and then you've got the tight ends try to get together, and then Tate and Johnson, and if Stafford's, you know, back to being a gunslinger, watch out. The Lions and that defense, because that defense is sneaky good, and that defensive line is ferocious. You cannot run on them. The Lions could be one of those players in the playoffs that everybody is just sort of forgetting about and underestimating. Do you know what I mean?
Well, if Reggie Bush comes back, that team looks totally different on offense. Although Joey Bell is a very solid 1A, Reggie Bush gives you that dynamic offensive player that other than Megatron, and I guess Golden Tate, you got to put him in that category.
He's
not really dynamic, but he certainly moves the chains and is a very, very solid, excellent addition. But Reggie Bush makes that team special, and he let Stafford really spread the field, and I think he takes so much pressure off of him because you get the ball to Reggie Bush with 5-yard swing pass, it could be a 20-yard gain. So he's important, and I don't think they go much farther than a first-round loss without Reggie Bush, but with Reggie Bush, I don't know. They could win a couple games.
And then the Bears wind up playing the Cowboys on Thursday night, which I think the Cowboys will win. But this Bear team, I want to just ask you this because I don't think you can really get out of and get rid of Cutler. Maybe you can get a team to take that contract, but I do think you can move on from this coach. And I got to tell you, I thought and spoke very highly and thought I'd see great things from Trestman. And it's like I don't know. I feel like they have no coaching, I feel like. It's horrible. To watch this team, you wonder. It just makes you wonder, especially if he's a quarterback whisperer and a guru. It's hard to fathom that this offense sometimes is as inept as it is. And you've got Forte and all the weapons and the toys, and they just and the lack of the GM getting defensive talent, and they've got a ton of injuries, be fair, but Ray, it might be time to switch. I think Rex Ryan might be coaching the Bears next year. I'm just saying.
But I don't know what Rex Ryan, I mean, I guess to his defense, Rex is due. We talked about this a week ago. Rex is due, always plays well. And if Mark Trestman is an offensive guru, then at least his offense should be playing consistently. And it's not a GM issue because they gave him, I mean, he's stacked. That offense is loaded. So I hear you on that respect, but I don't see Rex Ryan getting a head coaching job again. At least
what
not
about
this
Harbaugh
time.
From the Niners?
Now, Harbaugh's a different
guy.
Story.
Yeah.
Harbaugh's a different story. So Harbaugh, maybe. But I don't see that being sexy, Rexy.
We're going to be shocked with how many head coaching jobs there are going to be available. I think it's going to be up there like, a year or two ago, maybe 2 years, where it was like 8 to 10 or something crazy. I think it's going to be like that. There are going to be a lot of job openings. So that's Thursday night. Let's talk about some of this college football before we, we'll get back to the NFL. But, Ray, TCU, I think, made a claim. Obviously it's against Texas. But I think TCU looked very impressive on Thanksgiving Day. They made the kid Swoops, the Texas quarterback, look horrible. The defense is a little bit better than everybody thinks. I really think that when the dust settles, TCU deserves to find their way in the top four. I don't care about the Baylor loss. This TCU team, to me, if they played Baylor on a neutral field, they would have beat Baylor. They lost at Baylor by 3 with a crazy comeback, some weird calls, some crazy plays. you know, I don't know. I like the TCU team, to me, has played better than Baylor. Now, look, Baylor still got to play Kansas State. TCU beat Kansas State. We'll see what, I think it's next week, if Baylor can beat Kansas State. But I just like what TCU did. I know you saw today that the great Marshall team in overtime went down, and they finally made the top 25 at 24, Ray, and then they lost 67-66 to Western Kentucky. That's wild.
Crazy.
That's crazy. And then you called it. You said Arizona would win. I don't think you thought Stanford, though, would beat UCLA like that, 31-10. Shout out
and
to David Shaw.
And that's the biggest disappointment so far. I mean, not
UCLA.
That Brian, not that David Shaw won, but we were saying how UCLA had a chance. All they had to do was win out.
Win,
and
to
then
play
they
Oregon,
get to play Oregon. And then if they were to beat Oregon, then, wow, then it became really interesting. But you know what?
They
go
the
right back.
At home, too, Ray. How do you lose 31-10 at home when if you win, you're in, and all you got to do is beat Oregon, and then you're probably in the playoff? That's disgusting.
Yeah.
It's horrible.
This basically calls for a chance to the national championship. I mean,
that's horrible.
That's a bad loss right there.
But props to Rich Rodriguez, the ex-West Virginia, Michigan coach over there at Arizona. This is Arizona's first time being in the Pac-12 title game. So 42-35 over ASU. And ASU had benched Taylor Kelly, put in Berkovici to see if they get some magic with him, but it didn't work. And Arizona, man, the Wildcats, they're like tough in basketball and in football. It's time to give Arizona, by the time I get to Arizona. And did you notice Mizzou hung on and came back and beat Arkansas? So that means Georgia will not be in the SEC title game against Bama or Mississippi State. It's going to be Missouri. So they beat Arkansas, so kudos for them. So that's I don't know, that's interesting. Let's talk about rivalry weekend. Let's preview the Saturday games, and we could do some NBA and get to the NFL. So all these great matchups, you've got all the names, you've got the Iron Bowl, the A Bowl, you've got Clemson against South Carolina, these border wars, and you know, the same, you know, different conferences like now Virginia Tech are playing. But with the ranking, number 16, Georgia Tech, a very good team, going to number 9, Georgia. What do you think is going to happen in this game? Because this is a fascinating contrast of styles, and you know the way Georgia Tech plays. They're hard to guard and hard to stop.
Yeah. The question, though, is because this game doesn't mean as much to Georgia as it does, you know, as it would have if it weren't for the whole, you know, Missouri taking care of business, I'm not sure. You know, Georgia surprised me all year. When I thought they'd win, they lost. When I thought they'd lose, they'd win. So I have a suspicion, even though the game's in Athens, I have a suspicion Georgia Tech might win this game just because Georgia might be up for a little letdown.
In a rivalry game, you think so?
In the rivalry game. I mean, Georgia's got that. Look, to me, Georgia's a better team. I just something about it. I'm just feeling a little bit of an upset. Georgia can't win the SEC East. I just feel like a little air is let out.
Don't you feel it up here?
A little air is let out of the balloon.
Yeah, and then also remember Georgia Tech's got a lot to play for because that Duke loss a week or two ago. Georgia Tech is going to probably be playing Florida, or will be playing Florida State in the ACC title game championship. So Georgia Tech's playing.
They shut down Chubb. They shut down Chubb, and they win the game. So I don't know. Last week I would have said Georgia all day, but Georgia Tech 24-23.
I got to agree with you, and I'm going to say 27-24, and I think they pick Mason off. No Gurley with the injury, and Chubb will have his way, 113, 2 touchdowns. But I love Thomas, you know, the running quarterback, 827 yards rushing. He's got 5 touchdowns, 15 passing. This kid's thrown for almost 1,400 yards.
Georgia Tech's for real. So the rambling wreck from Georgia Tech, remember that? The Yellow Jackets.
Tommy Hammond, Brian Oliver.
Ray, Mark Price, Dwayne Farrell. Yeah. Those were the days. Georgia Tech, Bobby Cruz.
Cool.
So we can't even talk about Michigan, Ohio State. Years ago, this used to be the biggest game ever. I think this is the swan song goodbye for Brady Hoke. I just wonder if Ohio State will score 50 points on them or 60 points on them. So Ohio State, I'm sure, will advance quite easily. Now, this one's interesting. What do you think about the Egg Bowl? Mississippi State, number 4, can they hold on at number 19, Ole Miss?
Oof. Remember when both of these teams were in the top 5?
Yeah.
And it was all about Mississippi. So this game is in Oxford, which makes it very, very interesting. I think if this game was in Starkville, it would be all day Mississippi State. But because the game's in Oxford, I think it'll be a close game.
Mm-hmm.
But I still like this kid. Look, you've got two really impressive quarterbacks, you know, Bo Wallace and Dak Prescott. I do like my man Dak, though. I do think Mississippi State is going to squeeze one out and make it really, really interesting, going 11-1, 7-1 in the SEC. That SEC West this year is, you know, maybe the best, like, subdivision ever. You know, SEC is probably the best conference.
It's wild.
But this SEC West has just been phenomenal. Think about it, that Alabama, Mississippi State, and Ole Miss all in one set of the SEC. I mean, I like Mississippi State, though. I think they win a close game. I think it's a hard-fought game, fourth quarter, field goal, something like that. I'm feeling 24, you know, both of these teams play great D. Think it's going to be a high-scoring game. So I was going to say 24-20, but you know what? I'll modify that. I'll say 20-17, Mississippi State.
Ooh, you're going low, 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 low.
It's all about the D.
I do think because of the way they run their offenses, there might be a little bit more scoring. You know, maybe Robinson gets in there a couple of times, maybe Walton, maybe the running backs start to shine. But I do like Mississippi State because I think Dak Prescott, you know, he's not going to get the Heisman. He might not even get invited to New York now. But if he actually has one of those heroic games, he still might be the fifth guy to go to New York. You never know. Everybody's watching. Tomorrow's I forgot when they send in the ballots. It might be this weekend. Tomorrow might be the last games. But I think Mississippi State's going to win this one 27-24. And I think Ole Miss, they just have had a couple of injuries that has sort of derailed them, along with that horrible call to go for it in that game against I forgot who Mississippi did that was against LSU that killed their season for them. So that's the Egg Bowl. We're both going with Mississippi State. Dan Ray, we've got what's the next big matchup? I guess it's really just the Iron Bowl. Oh no, we do have Minnesota at Wisconsin. I forgot what they call this one. They call it something, but 18-14 right now, you got to call it the two teams.
It's cold bowl.
It's cold bowl. It's so cold. There's no D in this one. That's how cold it is. It's cold. I think it's Melvin Gordon left, Melvin Gordon right all day. I like Wisconsin's defense. Minnesota's been playing extremely well lately. Some impressive wins. That was a big win in Nebraska. So Minnesota is no slouch. That's why they moved up to 18. And, you know, a lot of people would like to see Minnesota win because it just, you know, helps out their victories, like Ohio State and I think it was, Mississippi State to beat Minnesota earlier or somebody. So, you know, a lot of people want Minnesota to win. But I'm going to go with Melvin Gordon. Not 200, not 300, not 400 yards, but I'd say like 160. And I think Wisconsin takes care of Minnesota 30-24.
I don't even think – I don't even think it would be that close. I think Minnesota's had a nice run. They're 8-3, 5-2 in the conference, but ultimately Melvin Gordon is too much. And I think even if you were to stop Melvin Gordon, I think Wisconsin can still score a little bit. I mean, they're almost scoring 40 a game. Both of these teams are pretty good, you know, decent offenses. I think the D is in favor of Wisconsin. And I got to think that Wisconsin playing at home in Madison in late November, they're going to be tough to beat. So I like Wisconsin actually pretty big. I think Wisconsin wins, I'm going to say, 33-23.
Okay, well, you got the Iron Bowl, and this is for revenge. Now, Auburn, Charles Barkley, Bo Jackson, they're all standing up. They want Frank Thomas as well. They want the revenge. They want the sort of the continuation from last year's game, the heroics of Chris Davis who's gone, and just the good feeling of Nick Marshall and everything, but it's not the same team. And they are not playing for anything, where last year they played for a lot. They had a late run, and they made it all the way to the title game and lost. But I think Blake Sims is really starting to come into his own, almost 2,700-yard passing yards, 20 touchdowns. I think Bama is, you know, obviously with Yeldon and Cooper and just all the talent that they have, I think they're starting to hit a groove. And I think they take it out on Auburn, and I think they handle Nick Marshall. They bottle him up. Remember, there's no Trey Mason on that field for Auburn either, who's, you know, having a pretty solid rookie season and now the number one back for the St. Louis Rams, by the way, who beat out, who's taken over the job from Zach Stacy and Cunningham. Cunningham is the goal line third down back, but your boy Trey Mason is the number one dog. I got Bama big. I got Bama 34-20 over Auburn.
Yeah, I like that. I think Alabama, those kids that are still on the team, remember last season, remember that incredible, unbelievable way that you lose. You fight back. Remember they fought back to get in field goal range to try, what was a 58-yard field goal, and this kid, Davis, runs it back 107 yards. So that's not going to happen again. I think that this team has shown some inconsistency on offense at times, but I think that the three-headed monster that they have, the two running backs and Amari Cooper, is too much. And even though Auburn, you know, has also shown flashes of being really good, especially in the beginning of the season, and Nick Marshall and Artis Payne and Williams, these guys can all play, I think ultimately, so offensively, Auburn is just as potent as Alabama. I just think the Alabama D is that much better. And the Alabama D holds Auburn, I think, 20, and then Alabama scores 31. So I'll say 31-20 Alabama.
31-21. All right. Let's take a hot break, come back, talk some NBA, and finish strong with NFL Week 13.
We're back, and we've got to talk.
And you know who's back. You know who's back, Ray.
Who's back? Tell us.
Did you see the stories? Well, just when the season was slipping away so fast, and six or six and a half games out, a gentleman by the name of Russell said, you know what? I can play. My hand is good. I'll put on the pad. I had some turkey. And Russell Westbrook.
And let me put it on your Knicks.
Put it on our Knicks. So now they're 5-12. Oklahoma City, what was the final score? Like 102-75?
105-78.
Oh, my goodness. And Russell.
Russell Westbrook had 32 on 17 shots.
And just dominated, Ray. I mean, he instantly. One thing that you notice about OKC, with Jackson, Lamb, and him, and Ibaka, they play defense. Steven Adams. And I got to say, I was concerned about them not making the playoffs. But if Durant can come back, they're saying maybe in just two or three more games, I think it's ahead of schedule. And I think the six games over time, it won't be a thing, especially when you see games like this tonight where Phoenix loses at Denver 122-97. So you can't, you just can't do that. Now, look, you got great matchups, Grizzlies and Blazers going at it, teams with great records. The NBA right now is very fascinating because I want to just say this about the East. Clearly, and they won tonight 109-102, and Derrick Rose played and played well, 21 points, 28 minutes. But clearly, I think the Chicago Bulls are the best team. And when Derrick Rose is Derrick Rose and healthy, and I think forget all the criticism, I actually think he's doing it right. If your hamstring hurts, Ray, you got to chill out. You got to rest. You can't afford, after all these injuries, to try to go hard and push through it in October, November, and early December and not be there for when they need him, which is when? April, May, June. So I think the Bulls and Thibodeau and Rose are doing it right. They're killing it softly. And I think the Bulls will be fine. I want to ask you, because I know you're big on Anthony Davis and the Pelicans. The Hawks beat them tonight, 100-91. How much are we disrespecting and sleeping on this Atlanta Hawk team? When you look at the team and the box score, nobody, you know, but look, another guy from the summer, right? Millsap played great in the World Cup games. He worked with the team. He's having a good season. But you've got Horford back. This kid, Damari Carroll, he's a fantasy basketball stud. Our man, Jeff Teague. Kyle Korver played with the Olympic World Cup team. He's better. Tell me, what do you think about this Atlanta Hawk team?
You know what? They're solid, and they are surprising me because I didn't think they would be very good. I looked at this team, and I saw a bunch of role players, ultimately. Their best player is probably Al Horford. Maybe Jeff Teague.
Millsap's right there, too. I think all three of them
are pretty... Millsap, you know what? Millsap has a ceiling, though. Millsap is one of those guys that is an undersized four that always plays hard and does his thing. But I don't think you're ever saying to yourself, you know, Paul Millsap is the star, is the stud of my team. Paul Millsap is a good, good player. But he's not... You know, you don't ride Paul Millsap. So then you say to yourself, all right, well, you know, Al Horford, Jeff Teague, you look at these guys and you're like, you know, they're all good players. You'd want them on your team. But who's your best player? Who's your even the Knicks? Well, they're a better team than the Knicks, right? But the Knicks have Carmelo Anthony and then a bunch of, you know, role players, right? They've got a bunch of really, you know, three really good players, and they're making it work, though. They're 8-6. You know, as it works out, this East is there for the taking, right? They can make the playoffs. I mean, I didn't think they would, but now that I look at the standings and how this season's shaping up, you know what it is? Unlike the Knicks, they've got role players.
They know their roles.
Play their role, right? They know their role. They accept their role. They play their role, right? Millsap, Damari Carroll, Al Horford, Teague, Korver's their shooter.
Scott,
you know, they got
the bench.
Kids off the bench. Yeah, Mike Scott shooting off the bench. And I like this team. I mean, look, they're not going anywhere in the playoffs, right? They might make a seventh or eighth seed. They're one and done in the playoffs. But in terms of just playing basketball, this is a good team. This is a very solid team, and they're a star away from being a team that can get out of the first round. But they're a solid team. Solid team.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think also in terms of giving out a little bit of props, spinning around the league, Jason Kidd's doing a heck of a job. The guy got ripped for how everything went down in Brooklyn to then come here. The Bucks 104-88 over the Pistons. And 10-7 for the Milwaukee Bucks right now. Nobody ever, Ray, 5-5 on the road. You can't tell me that anyone would have ever thought this much. And every night is a different leading scorer. Ilyasova, you know, tonight gives you 22-8. But, you know, the young rookies giving you minutes, Parker. You see Brandon Knight hustling and improving. O.J. Mayo, you know, does something. Larry Sanders, Giannis Akpotuoba, he's playing
that
great. Giannis. But even these role players, this team almost reminds you of the Hawks, right? Because you got off the bench Marshall, Ilyasova, this kid Chris Middleton, who's got a nice little game. We also remember Jared Bayless, who can, you know,
sure,
put it in
Jared
the hole and
Dudley.
Score, and Jared Dudley. So this is a, you know, maybe Henson plays some minutes here and there. This is a nice little team the kids got, and yeah, they don't really have stars, but like the Hawks, they've got a couple of good players. They've got some speed. They got the youth, and I think you like some of the building blocks with Parker, with Sanders. Maybe the rest of the guys are more bench guys. You know, Giannis is definitely that. He's got that Derek McKee in him, you know, where he does a little bit of everything. So we'll see as the years go.
What if you combine the Hawks
So let's do that real quick.
Is he a contender?
Okay, but let me ask you this. Who would be your five? So you take Horford and probably Teague, right?
You got to put Horford at the four, I think, and you put Larry Sanders at the five.
Okay, and so then
because Horford's always been undersized at the five,
right?
He's really
okay.
A four.
So you're starting Sanders, Horford, and Parker in the front court. In the back court, do you go with Knight or Teague? Probably Teague. And
I
then
go with
who
Teague.
And then do you start Kyle Korver just for spreading the court for the shooter?
Probably. O.J. Mayo's a better defender, and O.J. Mayo's
right.
More explosive.
But you'd rather have Mayo come off the bench and score.
You
then
might
you got a nice
even
little
go,
team. Because off
might
the bench,
go crazy and start Brandon Knight at the two.
Ooh,
just
and have
play
Knight
D
and
Knight together. He's a big guard. He can play the two.
Okay, so you do like a little Phoenix with Dragic and Bledsoe. Okay, and then
and
you'll
you
bring
have Giannis off the bench.
Giannis and Mayo and
Millsap.
Ilyasova. You got 9, 10. That's a pretty good team. Not bad. That's a good idea, Ray. Hey, look at this. Hey, now let me ask you this. Before we leave the NBA and stuff, what did you think about Cuban's comments? I don't know if you heard it the other night when he was on Wednesday night's coverage of Knicks and Mavs about reforming the conferences. So he basically felt that New Orleans, and it's weird, right, because nobody ever mentions Memphis because Memphis, Tennessee is in the East. But so he said the three Texas teams, the Mavs, Rockets, and Spurs, and New Orleans would go to the East. And then the Bucks, Bulls, Pacers, and Pistons, right? I think it was, Bucks. Yeah. So they would go to the West. What do you think? How do you think that would work?
You know what? I heard it, and I didn't really understand it. Why? I mean, again, change for the sake of change is, I don't know, you need to do that. But
well,
what's his reasoning?
He felt traveling wise, those Texas teams and New Orleans were closer to those Southeast teams in the East Coast, and
okay.
It's a quicker flight compared to, you know, if you're leaving Milwaukee or Chicago and you go play against, you know, the Western teams like Minnesota or whatever, it's, you know, that's not that far of a flight. I don't know. To me, if I was to switch it, maybe I wouldn't switch all the Texas teams. Maybe I would take the one that's, you know, close, like the one like Houston that's maybe closer to New Orleans, and I would switch three. So I would take maybe Houston, New Orleans, and Memphis, and then out of the Eastern Conference, I might just take Pacers, Bulls, and Bucks. Leave the Pistons.
Well,
that's what I would. I would do three for three. So I don't know.
I hear you.
Sometimes
interesting.
You know,
look, it's an interesting food for thought.
Well, but let me ask you. This might be a better question. How about just opening up to the playoffs being global and it being 1 through 16? Does that interest you?
That's more interesting because for the last 15 years, the Western Conference has been the better conference by far. And teams 9, 10, 11, 12 in the West are probably equivalent to teams, you know, 6, 7, and 8.
Remember the Eastward only had 4 or 5 teams last year. I think it was 5 teams.
Yeah, and think about it. But since the late 90s, the West, think about all the talent that was in the West when Rasheed Wallace – and Tim Duncan, and Kevin Garnett, and
Weber,
Shaq, and Kobe,
had
and
those four. Remember they, the power
all these guys.
Teams.
Yeah, and the West was consistently better. So that, to me, is more interesting. The only problem with that is that the way the schedule is now, you have an uneven schedule, right? You end up playing your division. But
have to balance a little.
If you're going to go 1-16, then divisions
and
conferences
should play each other three or four times instead of just the only home against the other conference. So before we leave the NBA, any other like surprises? Are you know Cleveland obviously starting to wake up a little bit there in the seventh spot. Pacers, oddly enough, the playoffs ended today. They got the eighth seed, so that's interesting.
The Spurs, were stumbling a little bit. Then they won tonight against Sacramento Kings.
Spurs, okay. What about the Clippers?
Yeah, what about
the Clippers?
The Clippers are doing.
They're starting to wake up, you think? They look
a little
the other
bit.
Night. They're 10-5.
I thought the Clippers would be Memphis, basically. So the Clippers are 10-5. I'm
13-2. Warriors and Grizzlies. Wow, that's impressive.
I like what I see out of a bunch of teams. I like what I see out of Memphis. I like what I see out of Houston. I like what I see out of even Golden State, right?
They're playing great defense.
Exactly. You've got a team
they're
that you always
one.
Knew on offense that they could play. You never knew that a Steve Kerr coach team would be a great defensive team.
I know, right? Give him his props, man. Give Steve Kerr his props. So, well, let's talk some NFL. Week 13, this is it for your fantasy heads. Ray and I are in some serious battles. We might even face each other in two out of the three leagues we're in together in the playoffs. There's still a shot for that. So there's not so many great games, and obviously we already had three of them. But right off the page, I think this Cleveland-Buffalo game is actually pretty fascinating. You think about these two teams and the last, 10, whatever many years, this would be a game for top three in the draft. Well, actually, this weekend, Ray, they've cleared up the snow, and this is a game of two pounded type of teams, 7-4 versus 6-5. The Bills still have a little bit of a shot. I think at home they're going to be glad to be back home, but I think the high of being in Detroit and the traveling and the snow and the family and yada, yada, I think it's going to finally catch up to them, and they're going to run out of gas, and they won't be able to give you four quarters. And I think the Browns had a big emotional lift with Josh Gordon coming back. I think Jordan Cameron might finally make it back this week. I think, they got rid of Ben Tate, and the two rookie running backs are balling out. Hoyer, he has his ups and downs, but he's been clutch. And I think the Cleveland Browns go to Buffalo, and that Buffalo defense is for real, so I'll respect them. But I think the Browns win late field goal, Ray, 23-21. Go, Browns, go.
The Browns are really surprising, and they are riding the backs. Think about this. If I told you Isaiah Crowell and
West
and Hoyer –
and Hawkins is their leading receiver.
And Hawkins,
amazing.
Who I had him and dropped on fantasy, be leading this team. You'd say, what? You're out of your mind.
Is your boy coach of the year? Could he be a candidate for coach of the year?
Why not?
Why not, right?
Why not? Either one of these coaches, depending on who wins, right? If Doug Marrone wins.
But if the Browns make the playoffs. I mean, everybody just says it's Bruce Arians. But if the Browns make the playoffs, you've got to put Patton in.
Not only that, but if you think about it, his first-round draft pick, which obviously the GM and the owner wanted, he's doing with this without the benefit, and no knock on Johnny Manziel, but without the benefit of a first-round pick. Essentially, he didn't have one because Johnny Manziel's sitting on the bench. So
they had Justin Gilbert.
Justin Gilbert, sorry. They had the cornerback Justin Gilbert. That's true. But the second of the first-round picks was Johnny Manziel. So if they win, the Browns go 8-4, that would be very impressive. But I think the Bills D.
Ooh. Okay.
I think the Bills D is too much.
Is this
I
not fantasy
Browns,
induced? Is this because they're on your fantasy team, Ray?
They did do me right last week with the fantasy points. They
You're
did
such a loyalist.
Do me right.
You're a loyalist to your fantasy team and your predictions. The fans have figured you out, Ray.
I think the Bills. No. The Bills at home. The Bills at home. That's where it's at. And you know what? Next week, I think, is the week that Poyer and your boy Gordon make a serious push for the playoffs. And, of course, that AFC North is just brutal. I mean, I don't even know how that's going to – you'll flip a coin 10 times and you figure out who wins. But I think Buffalo squeaks one out. I think the D, I think they get the Hoyer 6 or 7 times. I like this Buffalo team. Seriously, I like this D for real. And I think it'll be a low-scoring game. 21-20, Buffalo.
21-20. All right, so then we go to 2-7-4 teams, the Chargers and the Ravens. Now, this is fascinating. I think both these teams are sneaky good, and if they get in the playoffs, I think either one of them has the potential to do damage and advance. This has actually been a coin toss for me, and it comes down to the quarterback play. Rivers has been a little banged up and has slowed down after having a great first 5 or 6 weeks. And then Flacco, he just seems to somehow put it together whenever he has to. I hate to say this, but I'm going with the Ravens. I just they there's something about the defense, Suggs, Nada, Mosley. I like Flacco and Forsett, and I think Steve Smith Sr. has given his team a little extra bite to them that I think the Chargers just there's something they haven't been themselves. I don't know. It's they've just been a little bit off, and I think it's going to hurt them. I think good game, not crazily high scoring, but I think I'll say 26-23, the Ravens, and Tucker, field goal, beat the Chargers.
I got to agree. I think that the San Diego Chargers first half of the year looked like gangbusters, and Philip Rivers, we said, is ready to step into that elite category of quarterbacks and be in the discussion for MVP. And then something happened. They hit the wall. The oft-injured Ryan Matthews got injured. Brandon Oliver looked good for a while, but then the league kind of caught up to him. The guy who was disappointing me personally is Keenan Allen. I mean, I thought this kid coming out of Cal was the real deal, had a great rookie year. He's suffering a little bit from some sophomore slump. He and Floyd are just not getting it done enough on the outside. And Phillip Rivers is, you know, he's Phillip Rivers. He's a great quarterback, a gunslinger. But ultimately, I think you're right. I think even though statistically the Baltimore defense has given up a lot of points, I think at times they can still show flashes. Well, not of that Ray Rice, Ray Lewis defense.
Right, they don't have that read, but
yeah,
still.
But still, they're still a good team. I think because this game's in Baltimore, I think the Ravens pull away in the fourth quarter, and I think they win. I'm gonna say 26-23.
Now the team who's really got a hurt ego. They're on the road and they're 1-4. The 4-7 Saints going up against my 7-4 Pittsburgh Steelers, 4-1 at home. This is a weird game, and it's weird because the Saints, you know, they're playing on the road against the Steelers. You got the Panthers against the Vikings, the Falcons, you know, Tampa Bay's hosting Cincinnati, and the Falcons are playing against the Cardinals. I really believe every team in the NFC South is probably going to lose this week. And that's crazy because you're going to have a 10-loss team possibly win this division, and then the NFL will have egg on its face forever because that team will host the playoff game, and they should change the rule that that team should have to go on the road. They still make the playoffs, but they should have to go on the road. But we'll see how it plays out. Needless to say, too many B's. Bryant, Big Ben, Le'Veon Bell, who might be the most versatile back in the NFL, 21 TDs for my man. And what has he got? No, I'm sorry. Two rushing TDs. But he's got 951 yards rushing. He's about to crack 1,000. He's a great receiver. And then you got Antonio Brown, who I think is at the point where he's going to have to be in that top five. Him and Nelson are revamping that top five, and one of the big five is going to have to take a seat. But he's definitely in the top five this season. And the Steelers win 27-21. And I'll say this, Drew Brees is not the same quarterback this year. And I don't know what it is. I know you've noticed it. The stats are proving it. There's no more deep bombs from him. And teams are locking up Graham enough. Like, he's getting yards, but not the explosive plays. And the Saints are struggling, and they'll lose again. 27-21. Let's go, Steelers.
And to add to that, it might rain. So the rain slows the game down, more of a Steeler type of game, late November. You're right, something stinks in New Orleans, and I don't know what it is. And it's not all the after, you know, after too much drinking on Bourbon Street, you know, the next day. Something's not right. It just isn't clicking this year. And the funny thing is, you know, Mark Ingram looks like he stepped up and become that solid back that they've always needed.
They miss Sproles. It's the curse of Sproles, right? It happened to the Chargers. Now it's happening to the Saints. You can't get rid of the Sproles guy.
He's doing his thing in Philly. But you're right. I like to pick against your Steelers. But I think the Steelers just are too solid. They're too complete. And it's hard for me to think that the Saints are going to go 4-8, but they'll still be in contention for this division, which is just disgusting. You would think a 4-7 Saints team should have their backs up against the wall and they win this game. But I got to go with the Steelers. I think the Steelers win. I think they'll put up some points, but I think the Steelers win. So I think the Steelers win 30-27.
All right, the last two games. This is the game of the weekend. You've got the Patriots at the Packers, the two number 12s, the California quarterbacks. Both of them got distanced and overlooked in the draft. Obviously, Brady much more. 9-2 against 8-3. Now, the Packers are undefeated at home, 5-0. But one thing I know about this Patriots defense and what Belichick does, you'll probably see Revis Island on Cobb. And then Browner and the double team and the safety will be, you know, on Nelson. They're going to probably try to lock up Eddie Lacy. And it's going to have to be Davante Adams and Boykins and Quarles that will beat the Patriots. And I just think the Patriots find a way to slow down the explosive Packers offense enough that they can get Gronk and Edelman, and then Jonas Gray won't be late for practice or whatever, and he'll play, and then you'll have Blunt, and they can, you know, pound the Packers. Because the one thing I'll say, the Packers defense, yes, they can rush the quarterback, but you can still run on them, Array. And Matthews and Peppers, they can come forward, but, you know, when they want to hunt the quarterback, but I still think you can pound on them. And the Patriots will lead in time of possession, and the Patriots are going to win this game. I am a believer. Brady and Belichick have you know, they've just put it on people, and they will continue to do it. Good game, though. Little high scoring. How about 30-27 in Lambeau? Patriots win.
Disagree with anything you said, but I do believe that Aaron Rodgers is playing football. And I think that Jordy Nelson, Randall Cobb, and now with the reemergence of Eddie Lacy, I think the balance that Green Bay has is too much. And I think Quarles might catch maybe a touchdown because you're so worried about Jordy Nelson and Cobb on the outside. I like Green Bay to win this game. I think
I think that
we were worried about New England at 2-2. And then would they go rip off like 6-7 in a row? But they're due. They're due to get stung.
Okay.
And I think this is the team to do it. And Green Bay, late November, Lambeau. Look, it's not Tampa Bay coming up there or Miami coming up there from Florida. But still, playing in Lambeau is special. And we know Brady, but we also know that he has some weaknesses. I think if you can contain, well, now you got to contain the running game and Gronkowski. But if you can contain up the middle, you're not really afraid they'll beat you on the outside. So figure Green Bay finds a way. They sack Tom Brady 5 or 6 times. They
right.
rush him. They give him the happy feet, and they pull it off. I'm going to say a bit of a high-scoring game, but 31-26.
31-26. Okay, Sunday Night Football. We got the 8-3 Broncos at the 7-4 emotionally charged Chiefs playing at home, 4-1, in that crowd after the Raider loss for Eric Berry and his whole ordeal that he's going through, when we send out our prayers again for him. Ray, this one is really dangerous because they can do, even without Eric Berry, they can do what the teams that have slowed and beaten the Broncos this year have done, the Rams and Seahawks. They can rush the passer from both sides, our boy Tamba Ali and the linebacker, and Justin Houston is a beast. And I think their secondary, even without Berry, they've played without him before and done okay. I think the Chiefs are going to be able to win this game. And the only reason why I say it is because I don't think Julius Thomas will play. I don't think Sanders is completely healthy. Wes Welker's lost the step. And I think the two-headed monster of your boy Jamaal Charles, who with Le'Veon Bell are like the two best running, you know, all-around running backs in the NFL with Forte and Shady too. And you throw in Niles Davis. Niles Davis to me is probably the best two back or the 1B back in the NFL. And I just think Manning has been off his spot. Even though they got C.J. Anderson to run, it's a lot harder to run on the Chiefs. And they have to stay consistent with it. And I think they'll get a little pass happy. That crowd, that stadium, Ray, when Manning can't hear, he can't yell at the clock manager now, or the guy up in the booth. And
well, he can still yell.
Yeah, he can yell. Besides Seattle, you'd have to say Kansas City is probably the second hardest stadium to play in. It used to be New Orleans, too. But just in terms of crowd noise and the momentum and just the way it goes, Kansas City is a sea of red. And Andy Reid is going to coach the game of his life. So much so that finally Alex Smith will throw a touchdown to a wide receiver and Dwayne Bowe will touch the end zone. I got the Chiefs winning against the Broncos 28-27.
So I think the Broncos are shaky right now. They have basically been a 2-2 team in the last four games. They lost to New England, beat Oakland, lost to St. Louis, and beat Miami barely.
Yeah.
But I think they turn it around. I think this turkey, Thanksgiving, contemplating where they are, contemplating the fact that this team was basically assembled around Peyton Manning to win a championship, I think they put it in fifth gear. Arrowhead's a tough place to play, but Denver keeps coming and coming and coming. And now with this kid, C.J. Anderson, toting the rock, and they're getting some back at running back, even without Julius Thomas, who they will need in the playoffs.
Yes, they will.
But I do believe that they have enough weapons, and this kid, Emmanuel Sanders, has turned out to be
a great,
you know.
The best free agent signing.
On Eric Decker.
He's been the best.
So Denver's just got too much posse. So I think Denver puts up 30, even against Kansas City, I think they put up 35. And I see Kansas City scoring more than 24. So I like 11-point Denver win.
In KC.
In KC, that's right.
Well, you know, I can't. You can't be mad at that, and you can't be mad at Manning. I just wonder I really think it's going to be the game of emotions, and that's why I went with KC. I've been going back and forth. Truth be told, I've picked the Broncos in my weekly picks and stuff, but for right now, the emotion told me to go with the Chiefs, so I got to go with the Chiefs. But I'm not mad at you. So it's going to be a great weekend. You know, we had great holiday, Thanksgiving. I know Ray was holding it down with 18 people with his family. So that's great. And safe travels.
Had my stuffing.
your sister, the family. You had your stuffing. You had your side dish. Ray, can I tell you? You know, yeah, you know my wife put her foot in it. I got to give props to Alana. We did it for the first year. We fried a turkey, and it looked like gloom and doom. Right? It looked like it was not going to work. When everything else was ready, the turkey was not ready because the light, you know, was outside and the flame kept going out. But
oh, boy.
My wife got it together. My son, Elijah Duke, 15-year-old, stepped up, and he's watching the flame and relighting it. And we had fried turkey for the first time. It was so juicy and yummy. I just want to go kiss that bird and tell him thank you, Ray. That was some good, good food. But she didn't get a chance to make it, so she might even make that up tomorrow. Too much. So we got to get the Ray sides out to 80-degree weather for Thanksgiving one Thanksgiving, man. So we're going
to
make that.
Natural. It doesn't even seem natural to have Thanksgiving and come in shorts
but
to a Thanksgiving meal and a T-shirt.
There's a little chill, so you can go out in the morning in the backyard, throw the football around. Maybe you put on just a little long sleeve, some sweatpants, and then you just, you watch your turkey and, you know, it's daylight, you know, even when you're done with the second game. Oh, my, Ray, it's not bad. It's really not bad.
Sounds
awesome. Shout out to everybody. And I got to FaceTime my family back in New York, so that was great. And shout out to our boys. I got to say happy birthday to my cousin, Blaine Burnett. He's in the Bahamas celebrating his birthday today. He joined the 44 Club. And then our buddy, Coast to Coast, his birthday's tomorrow. Ray's coming up soon, so Stacey Manley's tomorrow. Happy birthday to all these Sagges. And everybody, thanks for listening. And like always, Ray and Tay, talking. What's with Glenn?
Have a great weekend. We'll see you on Monday.
Yeah, have a good one. We'll be come back with a good segment on Monday. Maybe it's Samson Simpson. They're not ready. Hit them up. Peace. Let's go, Killers.